The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Weekly Extra. Today, Champions League. Man City get a second after passing their German test but failing in sums. While there's also a degree of failure for Arsenal in Naples. Still, four Premier League sides through, four Germans, three Spanish, just the one Italian. We round up all the Euro news, then look forward to a weekend of Premier League drama from bottom, like West Ham Sunderland, to top, Spurs Liverpool and Man City Arsenal. All that plus post tweets and Campbell in the soup, in the can. DJ held after questions over his record, and no, it's not a Stevie G story. The match fixing's shocker and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Golly, well, it's a notebook off here in the... In the pod, Barry's come with a big ring binder and several pages of folded up stats and stuff. Ian McIntosh is here with his special black folder. And Amy, good luck with that little fella. Nice to see you, though.
You
it's all
too.
Up here, isn't it?
Always. Well, there. I never usually bring any notes, but I felt inhibited last time by the extent of notes around me, so right. I thought I'd make a small effort.
A lot of these don't actually say anything. I just bring them here for props and so I can shuffle papers and feel important.
Well, I noticed that Barry's notes are always useful for just doodling purposes.
Yeah.
Doodle us some detail on that extraordinary Man City win away to European champions Bayern, as Toon Toon posts. Just think what the score could have been if Man City were any good away from home.
Well, at the start of the game, it looked like they were going to get overrun and possibly lose by a cricket score, though not a cricket score England would have got, possibly someone whoever's playing England. But sorry, I digress. And then they got back into it, put in a sterling second half performance to win the game, but not win it by enough. So you know, while there's no such thing, you'd imagine, as a bad win over Bayern Munich, you have to question the value of that win, because they might as well have lost the game. It wouldn't have made any difference due to the extraordinary state of affairs that was their manager, and apparently no one on their backroom team or any of the players on the bench knowing the rules regarding proceeding through the competition.
Right, was it?
So they needed another goal to finish top of the group and didn't get it.
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about in there. A three-goal comeback was pretty unlikely, but a three-goal comeback powered by James Milner, perhaps even fewer people would have predicted.
Yeah, he had a remarkable game. And, yeah, everyone knows that at this stage, don't they?
Well, I suppose they do. I suppose they do. What about Bayern as well? Was it very much a post-Christmas party performance from them?
They had won 10 in a row, and if the suggestion is they were all hungover, they hit it well for the first, 20-30 minutes, and maybe then the beer started seeping out of their pores. And
I've had hangovers like that, you know.
They get progressively worse.
Yeah, you're fine until you get to work, and then something snaps at 10 a.m. and you fall over.
Right.
Man City did at least take great heart from making a big statement, and I think it's important in terms of their status as a Champions League club. And if you think about the way that they were written off after the first game when they were embarrassed at home against Bayern Munich, to then be able to effectively return the compliment and show people that not only are they qualifying for the Champions League comfortably, knockout stages, which they're obviously intending to make an impression on now, but they have confidence, they have reason to feel that they can make an impression. In fact, if you look at the draw of the last 16, I don't think there's ever been quite as much of a chasm between the group winners and the runners-up. In fact, it's quite difficult to look at whatever pairings come out of the draw and think, well, where's the upsets coming from? And Man City are probably the only team that you'd think can take on any of those group winners.
You wouldn't put Arsenal in that.
Well, I think Arsenal would be probably a shade below that, but Man City, just because of the strength of their squad, you would imagine have the best chance of overcoming one of those top seeds.
Well, that's fair enough, but in my opinion, the big statement they made was that we've spent well over £1 billion and no one thought to purchase
an abacus.
But you do have to feel a certain amount of sympathy for Pellegrini. I mean, of all the scenarios he could have prepared for, scoring four in the Allianz Arena was probably pretty far down the list. And he has, as Amy said, just whoop the European champions in their own place. Mm. And I do, as funny as a tribute to Alan Ball is, I feel a little bit sorry for him that he's not getting more credit.
Pellegrini.
Yeah.
Although this is something that happens a lot this time of year. Arsenal went there last season and won 2-0 at the Allianz Arena. And indeed, English clubs have won, stats reveal, on each of their last five trips to Germany in the Champions League. Did actually want to get Rafa in at this point, but he's got into hiding. Into hiding, you know.
Hmm.
Anyway, well, remarkable stuff from City, and they certainly, compared to our predictions for this game, deserve a warm round of applause, although it's a deeply disappointing result to finish second, given, as you say, the chasm between the teams in the different sides of that particular draw.
I think it is deeply disappointing for them.
Okay, so
because their record in that competition isn't good.
But yeah, given that, yeah, all right, compared to, I take your point, it's great that they got through, but it would have been a billion times better if they got through in top spot.
Yeah, because 7 of the last 10 winners of the Champions League have won their group.
Only one of the last 8 winners has come from second place.
Oh, that's a stat off.
Anyway, we're both basically saying, well done, City, eh, Barry?
Yeah.
Yeah, super. All right, and now they take on Arsenal. Well, what late drama in this group. Could have been Borussia Dortmund out. For a long time, looked like it might have been. Could have been, for a while, Arsenal out. Well, it had Napoli. No, in fact, it could never have been Arsenal out. But had Napoli scored again at the end, then it would have been.
But that would have been the fastest goal in the history of goals. Because, well, they pretty much kicked off and the referee blew his whistle.
Though, yeah. They were pretty much on the back foot for the last half hour. Which is the kind of thing you expect. You know, Arsenal were pretty sure that they were going to go through, and Napoli had to throw everything at them. So it was always going to be a little bit one-sided. And it was strange because for most of the game, they controlled it really, really well, apart from the two occasions when Napoli scored. Mm. Apart from that, what else did you think of the play, Mrs. Lincoln, being the saying? There was a certain amount of composure, but it felt, to be honest, I think Amy will agree, they were keeping something in the tank for the weekend there, weren't they?
I think that's a dangerous game to play, and Wenger, one of the things his maxims that he says time and again is the best way to prepare for a big game is to win the previous game. I think he would have dearly wanted, ideally, to have the momentum of a good result. Obviously, there's a massive difference between the amount of rotation that Arsenal and City are able to do, and I think Arsenal are clearly worried about that. And there were a few people who seemed to think that Arsenal should have rotated quite heavily for this Napoli game, with a view to being stronger and more fresh for the City game. But as was very obvious on the night against Napoli, any more rotation would have been highly dangerous, I think. Yeah.
And they go through, but it is that glass half empty scenario of going through in second place, like City.
Yeah.
Could they not have pushed to actually finish group winners?
I think it was one of those things where it sounds daft, and I think it's easy for us when we're not players to sit and imagine how a team is not mentally prepared to go for it every single game. But you look at it and think, well, why didn't they play with a little bit more panache, a little bit more fluidity, a little bit more of the cohesion and attacking emphasis that they've managed lately? But they just couldn't get going. It was that weird situation of knowing that they were more or less through, barring a complete calamity. And in a way, the game reminded me slightly of that Bayern-Arsenal game that you talked about, where I think Bayern were sort of in the position Arsenal were in, where they knew that barring an absolute calamity, they were going to go through. And they found it difficult to motivate themselves and therefore got beaten, which is exactly what happened to Arsenal, as they inflicted on Bayern. The ramifications are that there's no simple opponent coming up. And I thought that one of the highlights of last night almost was the way that Thierry Henry showed barely disguisable disdain for Jamie Redknapp when he suggested that, oh, well, you've got to want Atletico Madrid, haven't you, as your next opponent. Amongst the variety of things that Redknapp said that Henry seemed to consistently want to put down.
It was an extraordinarily assured and languid performance from Thierry Henry in his special guest star role in the Sky thing. By the end, he was barely even starting his sentences, let alone finishing. He would just throw a theme up there and Jamie would hastily finish his sentence off for him. It was magnificent.
I didn't see that.
Oh. You were on Arrival channel, weren't you, Barry? What were you talking about over on Lunch?
Well, I was watching Bob Wilson watch Arsenal. And
I would pay money to do that.
He was getting very, very excited indeed. Right. I thought he was going to have a coronary. And he's an incredibly nice man.
Mm. Okay.
So I think I said last week, I like watching football with footballers. I don't get to do it very often, but it's real. interesting.
Somebody the other day was revealing they were listening to an audiobook of some... It's you, Ian, isn't it?
That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd adopt Bob Wilson as grandfather if I could,
right.
if he'd have me. But okay. he's easily one of the nicest people I've met, not even in football, just in general.
Just in general.
He's lovely.
Right. Cool. Anyway, now, we'll talk a bit about the ramifications for poor old Napoli, perhaps in a second. But for Arsenal, things beginning to get a little bit jittery at this point. You've got your 1-1 draw with Everton, and then a defeat away, and then a trip to Man City. If that goes wrong, all of a sudden the shine comes off the season in extra-fast fashion.
I mean, it looks prime for a dip when you look at it that way. And obviously, probably the place they'd least like to go in the world now is the Etihad, which is probably they have the best home record of anybody over these last couple of seasons.
Mm.
And it's not helpful, as Wenger has pointed out, that they get back from their trip on the early hours of Thursday morning, then on Friday they're travelling to Manchester, and then it's the early kickoff, which the extra day and the home game would appear to work in Man City's favour,
right,
for this one. But I just think that the way the Arsenal players were talking, I think that unless they're physically completely knackered, they're ready for it. They're ready for making sure that they don't have a disaster at Man City. And I think the way that they can keep the ball, if they're on their game,
that
holds them in good stead.
Could it?
And also, I think that defensively, Arsenal are so much improved. And even though they conceded a couple of goals last night, both of which were fantastic finishes by Napoli, overall, the defensive performance was quite strong. I think that Carl Jenkinson, though, is an obvious area where Man City might be hoping to attack a little bit more down that side. But Koscielny and Mertesacker and Szczesny have been so much improved with Arteta and Flamini in front of them that they're so much more solid than they normally are in those kind of difficult away games.
Yeah, worryingly for Arsenal, it's not just an extra day of rest for Man City, but Sergio Aguero wasn't even used in Munich, and Touré was out suspended, so they'll both come in absolutely fresh.
Yeah, and you compare that to Giroud, who was stretching at the end, and you saw him in the last couple of minutes feeling his hamstrings, and that doesn't look too wonderful from body language point of view. But
come on now, you've still got Nicholas Bendtner.
Absolutely.
I did notice last night in cyberspace a lot of Arsenal fans appeared to be quite angry that their side had lost, and you kind of wonder, what the hell do you want? Because before the season they were forecasting disaster, all sorts of harbingers of doom. They're top of the league, they've qualified for the last 16, they go to Manchester City on Saturday and lose. I don't think that'd be a disaster, because pretty much everyone's going to lose at Manchester City.
Interesting though, because if Chelsea do manage to beat Crystal Palace, that would mean that the gap will only be 2 points between them, should they lose at the Etihad, when they welcome Chelsea to the Emirates the following week. Carumba.
They'd beat Chelsea at the Emirates.
Well, that's an interesting point of view. It's certainly a possibility. Does the heading Man City Arsenal have any entries underneath it in your big book?
Well, just the City, they've won 7 on the spin at home, but Arsenal have a very good away record. They've won 10 of their last 12 away in the league. So, and then the other entry is just a reminder that a lot of Arsenal fans were angry for a different reason last night, because they missed the start of the game.
Ah.
The buses designated to take them from the airport or wherever to the stadium got stuck in traffic, and
no, that wasn't quite the case.
Oh, really?
I think what happened, it was a deliberate ploy. They told the Arsenal supporters to meet at a specific place in town to take buses to the stadium for their own safety together. And what had happened was, once they were on the buses, they kept the buses without moving for around about half an hour to ensure that they would miss the kickoff, and to ensure basically that all the Napoli fans would more or less be in the stadium by the time the Arsenal supporters turned up, so there would be no face-to-face confrontations. That meant that by the time the Arsenal supporters rocked up, there was a big surge to get into the turnstiles, and the police wanted to have their say with their batons and shove people around, and I gather it was an extremely unpleasant experience.
Mm. Not quite as unpleasant as the one for Ajax fans visiting the San Siro, although appears to be all sorts of dirty dealings on both sides there. But we'll talk about the Milan result a bit later.
There's one other interesting thing for last night.
Throw some records at us.
Napoli exit the competition with 12 points.
A record.
Zenit St. Petersburg advanced to the last 16 with 6 points.
Never happened before.
Manchester City.
Yeah.
Comes second in their group with 15 points.
Unprecedented. And Amy?
Victoria Pilsen.
We think.
With 3 points, getting themselves into the Europa League, and also Galatasaray qualifying with a minus six goal difference.
Crazy. Mm. Absolutely crazy. All right, well, that's enough for part one. And we're going to compose ourselves and come back with part two, featuring Chelsea, Man United and more Champions League after this.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Chelsea! They went through against Steaua Bucharest. They're taking on Crystal Palace. Hey, Crystal Palace, eh? 4 clean sheets in 5? 3 wins in 4? I'm thinking those are the numbers.
Do you know what else is even weirder?
Go on.
3 games under Tony Pulis. They've only picked up 3 bookings. You would expect 3 bookings in the first 15 minutes of Tony Pulis.
And how about Chamakh? Return of Chamakh, as one headline put it this
week.
Well,
haven't we done a service to the poor man? He's endured such difficult times, but when we pulled him apart, eviscerated him mercilessly here, he's suddenly recovered because he's now got 2 goals in 3 games under Pulis.
There you go. And I think 3 goals in 4 shots on target this season, which is pretty remarkable.
Very
stuff.
Efficient, isn't he?
He is. He is. What about Chelsea, Amy? At least a goal from Demba Ba.
Yeah, a quality touch there.
Right.
In off his knee.
Right. Anything to suggest to you that Crystal Palace might continue their miraculous recovery this weekend at Stamford Bridge?
Not really.
None?
No.
Okay. All right. Man United, speaking of recoveries, stopped the rot in dramatic fashion with a massive win against Shakhtar Donetsk.
Just about. They were pulled from pillar to post all the way through the first half. They couldn't string any real passes together. And Shakhtar's counter-attacks were just tearing them asunder. It was ropey stuff. And then apparently Moyes unlocked the special hairdryer left to him by his predecessor.
Mm.
And things improved just about enough in the second half. He said afterwards that there was no real difference in the level of performance in that game than there was in the Newcastle game and in the Everton game. The only real tangible difference being that they scored and the opposition didn't, which might not be what Manchester United fans are looking for. But while Moyes has taken a battering for the way he started the season, you only have to look at the midfield they put out there. It was Phil Jones and Ryan Giggs in the middle for the Champions League. That's a defender who was bought for the future and a winger of the past at Manchester United, one of the biggest teams on the planet. And you can throw a lot of poo at Moyes for the last couple of months, but that's Manchester United's midfield, a defender and an ageing winger. How have they been allowed to get to that position?
Extraordinary, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Extraordinary. They do have a run of games, though, which could put a much nicer spin on their season. Stoke, West Ham, Hull and Norwich, all up before Spurs come to Old Trafford on New Year's Day. It's a run that starts, though, away to Aston Villa. Now, Villa haven't beaten United at home since 1995, but you'll recall that Newcastle hadn't beaten Man United at Old Trafford since 72 and Everton since 1996, I think. It's that kind of season for those numbers to tumble.
Villa have been very poor at home, though. I think they've only scored 6 goals, maybe only 7 points. This is just off the top of my head. It's probably wrong.
4 defeats already.
Correct.
Is it correct?
Yeah.
Good God, there's a first time for everything. They seem more set up for the counter-attack than for really taking people on, but you know, maybe that will work here. But it's just very difficult with United's domestic form to make any kind of prediction.
Right. United haven't won a league match this season when Robin van Persie's been missing.
And what's his likely fitness for this weekend, Barry?
I don't know. He struggled against Newcastle and made a cameo the other night. So I don't know. Ken Early, former who famously filled in for you once and does a very good podcast now in Dublin, the second captains, he wrote an article in the Irish Times on Monday in which he said Moyes' big concern is the fitness of Van Persie. He needs to get him fit, but he also thinks possibly it's the Moyes training regime that has him unfit. He's being overtrained the way Craig Bellamy claims he was and seems to claim quite with some justification that he was at Manchester City. So I don't know how they're going to settle that.
Well, that's interesting because that's a story that's been going since the start of the season, that Van Persie was unhappy with that. And a lot of people would suspect that might be what was behind that recent story of him maybe asking for a move away, although he denies that. A lot of people posting in on the subject of Moyes Don't Cry. Abu Dhabi says that Moyes Don't Cry reminds me of the vampire movie The Lost Moyes. Any other suggestions other than Moyes pollution from the Moyesy neighbours? Johnny Five says Moyes in the black stuff, which is, you know, a future headline, I'm sure. Scouting for Moyes, as random bloke, and bad Moyes from Johnny Five Eyes again. All useful ones for the future. Other Champions League? Well done, Olympiacos. They went through in a quite remarkable game. Three red cards, three penalties there against... it was Anderlecht, wasn't it? It was Anderlecht. Yep, certainly was. They get into the last 16 on goal difference, which is not bad from their group. And that means that you've got four English teams, four Germans, three Spanish, and just the one Italian, French, Russian, Greek, and Turkish. The Italians, it's their worst ever set of results since the Champions League went to 32 teams back in, what, 1999. Just Milan getting through. As Adam Digby was posting, Milan do everything wrong, players, formations, tactic, off-field management and owner, yet they're the ones who get to the last 16. Football A. And this in a game in which Ajax had 71% possession. Milan just hung on for a 0-0 draw at the San Siro. And as a result, they'll get all the Italian money from all the Italian TV money from the knockout stages. Bingo, ka-ching.
That'd be useful. Well, yeah. I mean, Juventus is the one that is a bit of a struggle to make sense of. But I guess if you only the only win that they had in the whole campaign was at home to Copenhagen, that's not really enough, is it?
No, that's the thing. Well, there's two big themes playing out in the Italian press. Certainly on Thursday, and since the game was postponed from Tuesday night, indeed, because they played the first, 31 minutes, I think, on Tuesday night, and then the snow came in. And it's something we'll address a little bit more in the paper review, which will be up late Thursday, early Friday. But whilst they are saying it's not an excuse because we should have won this back in Turin, where the pitch was absolutely perfect, what they feel the Turks did to the Galatasaray playing surface was little short of scandalous. Basically, I don't know if you saw this, when they cleared the snow off, there were 60 minutes to play, so one half of which Juve were going to be attacking one end. So they basically drove the tractor repeatedly across that side. So one half of the pitch was all grass, and that was fine. That was Galatasaray. And the area which Juve were going to try and play into was just an utter ploughed field. And right at the death...
But I mean,
Didier Drogba sets up Schneider.
I find that slightly dubious in the sense that if that end that Juventus was attacking was a mess of a pitch, surely there's all sorts of potential for defensive howlers as well.
Well, it was quite a specific band. It was basically the midfield part of it. The area around the Galatasaray goal was actually all right, but if you see pictures of it, it's just extraordinary the state of that area, specifically that area of the pitch, actually, which has had a tractor going back and forth.
It looks like the tractor's been pulling donuts for about half an hour there. It's amazing.
It's brilliant stuff, and apparently it's not the first time this has happened. I think that Galatasaray did this to Cluj previously, but it's a trick for the Italians to learn because they're not averse to, as we know. Making more favourable the conditions.
Yeah, particularly Juventus. So, you know.
Anyway, so, Juve, as I say, a lot of outrage at the whole conditions of that match away in Istanbul. But at the same time, an awareness that this was something that they should have sewn up a long time ago on better pitches. And Napoli, very, very unfortunate. At least they went out heads high, as they say. And Milan go through and get all the money. Quite extraordinary.
Yeah, we get complaints, a lot of complaints, that we never talk about Scottish football on this podcast, so maybe we should turn the spotlight on Celtic.
Good idea, Barry. And let's dial up Sidlow, who can tell us all about that needle match between Barcelona and the aforementioned Glaswegians. Hi, Sid.
Hi, Jimbo.
Hey, what a week for the Spanish, eh?
Well, I suppose for three out of the four of the Spanish, of course, Real Sociedad, in a way, it doesn't feel like a disaster what happened to Real Sociedad because their disaster was pretty much confirmed three match days ago.
Right.
So obviously there's quite a lot of excitement at just how well Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona qualified. Just one defeat between the three of them. But of course, the the fly in the ointment is Real Sociedad.
Right, well, let's not worry about them, because Atleti, Barca and Madrid...
Well, let's not worry about them, because no one else in Spain will really worry about them. That's kind of part of the problem.
The big three, quite extraordinary statistic, 14 wins, 3 draws, as you say, 1 loss, 51 goals for... 13 against, and a plus 38 goal difference for the three Spanish sides against their combined opposition, most of which goals came in that one game for Barcelona against Celtic the other night.
Well, a big chunk of them did, didn't they? And also, you had the same result with Real Madrid when they went away to Galatasaray at the start of the competition, also winning 6-1. Yeah, Barcelona, I must confess, I'll be honest with you, yesterday I was far more taken by Arsenal's group because I didn't have to cover the Barcelona-Celtic game on watching a game that actually mattered. But it was. But I've watched the highlights since and very, very positive response from the Spanish and the Catalan media this morning. That there's a real sense that Barcelona did some of the things that they haven't done this year, that they moved the ball much quicker, they pressured much higher up the pitch, that Neymar was finishing things off, which up until now he hadn't always done. And I actually think to some extent Neymar probably needed to be a little bit more greedy at times. And they were very, very good last night. But with that huge, giant, flashing neon light that says, caveat, caveat, it's Celtic.
Right, fair enough, fair enough. Well, they go through, obviously, in the group with Milan as group winners, which I think they're already more sorted.
How do Milan keep doing it, Jimbo? I mean, you follow Italian football. They're absolutely useless. And they keep on kind of being there.
Yeah, watch them win.
Well, that's the thing, they will.
I don't think they will, but, you know.
No, they probably won't, because one of the things that I think is most striking, you look at the Champions League now and you look at it at two lists, list of teams that came first, list of teams that came second, and the difference between the two lists is absolutely enormous, except for City and Arsenal. And, of course, that's because they were in groups with two very, very, very good German teams who just happened to be in the final last year.
Yeah. Other questions, though, Sid? Here's Zafar saying, hey, Sid, what do you think of Moyes watching Koke last night? Is he a January potential move?
Well, I'll be honest with you, if I was Koke, or to give him his full name, George Resurrection, which I think is brilliant, what a name.
Right.
If I was George Resurrection, to be honest with you, and Moyes came in January, I'd tell him where to go. Because, you know, he would go to Manchester United unable to play in the Champions League for the rest of the season. He's at an Atletico Madrid team who I think have the opportunity to do something really quite good in this year's Champions League. An Atletico Madrid team who at the moment are better than Manchester United. Although, of course, that could well be tested. You never know, they might come up against each other at some point. So a move, perhaps, in the summer would make some sense for Koke, but I just don't see any logic to it in the winter window, unless, of course, they drive an enormous truckload of gold round his house.
Do Atletico Madrid need lorry loads of gold?
They could do with it, simply because they're a side that have significant financial problems, but not so bad that they're absolutely desperate, and not so bad that they would be forced to do it now. I think they'd be reasonably happy to do it in the summer, maybe.
Sid, what about Cristiano Ronaldo then, with his 9 goals? Yeah, another record here, Barry.
Yeah.
9 goals in 6 group matches.
Yeah, and he missed that penalty as well, which he sort of did as a Panenka, but without it being a proper Panenka. It wasn't soft enough to be a Panenka, really, was it? He didn't actually seem that annoyed, which I was quite surprised about, because I thought the idea of getting to 10 would have clearly been really important to him. One of the things that came out of the Madrid game was it felt at times, certainly late on, that Madrid's players were conscious of looking for Ronaldo, perhaps aware of that record. Arbeloa after the game said, well, of course we're looking for Ronaldo. We always do. It's not about records. It's about the fact that he's a brilliant player. Mm. And he has been brilliant. I mean, really, really brilliant this season. I mean, the first 3 or 4 weeks, perhaps, not quite found his feet, but since then he's been extraordinary.
All right, where are you off to this weekend, Sib?
I will be at the Calderon on Sunday night to see Atletico against Valencia, and ooh, I think unusually that might be the only game I do this weekend.
All right,
and the only game I do in person, anyway.
Right, well, is that the big highlight of the weekend then?
I think it probably is, although there's a reasonably difficult one for Barcelona, and obviously because they're under pressure from losing at Atletico Bilbao, they have Villarreal come to the Camp Nou. Villarreal have actually had a bit of a dip over the last 3 or 4 weeks, but that's potentially difficult for Barcelona. But I think the most exciting one is Atletico Valencia, and not least because Valencia are a very weird team at the moment.
Yeah, how so?
Well, they win a couple of games, everything seems to be fine, and they lose 3 or 4 in a row, and Djukic, the manager, seems to be definitely gone. Then they win a couple of games, and everything's fine again.
What about Barcelona's new stadium? Is that a reality?
Yeah, well, something is a reality. They talked about it this week, and they were saying, right, well, there are basically two options. One is a brand new stadium a little further up the diagonal towards Hospitalet, so a bit out of town. And the other is a substantial remodelation, that's a bad word. What's that in English? Refurbishment?
Remodeling?
Refurbishment doesn't really do it justice, within the current spot. But even that will cost something like €300 or €400. And of course, there's still the option of nothing happening at all, and we will put this to a members' vote, just not yet. So it feels to me like they're trying to prepare the ground to make sure they do this. And it seems like a pissing contest to me, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, the Camp Nou's got some flaws, but it's certainly not a stadium that needs a massive, massive restructuring. It's certainly not a stadium that needs fraying out either.
All right, Sid, very nicely done. Thank you very much for that update. Enjoy your weekend.
Fantastic, and I'll speak to you on Monday after draw, presumably.
Look forward to it. Cheers, Sid.
Cool. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Well done to all of us, avoiding the obvious joke about Camp Nou having lots of flaws because it's a big building. Because, yeah, to flaws, Barry. It has a first floor and a second.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Little bit of music, and then when we're all up to speed, a post or two, and then more Premier League. Posts! Poor old Edgar Derby says, just to be clear, a catapult and a trebuchet are two distinct pieces of artillery, the latter characterised by its use of a sling. So now you know, Amy. Don't go making that mistake again. All whites... takes issue with my claim that we were held up in traffic and the car in front of us was literally held up by kids with guns. Help me here, says All Whites. I'm being left behind by modern language. So this is the literal use of literally as opposed to the modern use. Should he have said that they were literally held up by the motorway above the favela while they were literally held up by slow traffic while they were, meaning the car in front, were literally held up? Now I'm confused, All Whites. Coconuts, science fun. Humidity is bad, not because you are breathing water. Yeah, another fallacy that we were peddling in Monday's pod. I am sorry about this. But because your sweat cannot evaporate, and therefore you cannot dissipate body heat, which makes you feel like Rabsy Nesbit on a Monday morning. Or Bayern Munich after the Christmas party.
Jim White from The Telegraph was out at BT Towers last night, and he was saying him and a few other journalists had interviewed Sandro.
Oh, yeah.
The other day, and they were asking him about, what's the name of the place?
Manaus.
And Sandra burst out laughing, and they were saying, oh, what's so funny? And he said, I'm just laughing at the thought of the England football team having to play in a place like Manaus. Mm. And the lad said to him, why, have you ever played there? And he burst out laughing again and going, I might go fishing there. I certainly wouldn't play football.
Right. Well, that's good to know. I mean, equally, the Sun, I think, got Sean Custis, who's 50 and not especially in shape, to run around in a pair of jeans in the new, I think it's the Amazon Stadium there, and took pictures of him looking sweaty afterwards to see, there, you see, FIFA? Pretty damning stuff. Match fixing. Crikey, what's all this about? Six in custody. Ian, worrying times. DJ Campbell?
Yes, absolutely. But
picking your words with care here, aren't you?
As a lawyer standing behind me with a very big pair of scissors.
Right.
The only thing about this story is there's been a lot of links made to the Premier League, and dear Christ, I hope this isn't my hex kicking in, but it's a lot easier to bribe a footballer who's only earning sort of £400, £500 a week than it is to bribe a footballer on £100,000, £150,000.
You know this from experience, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right. It's the months of time I've wasted trying to plot my operations. It is obviously a terrible thing at that level, and a terrible thing for football indeed. But the links being made to the Premier League, it would take an awful lot of money to do something there these days.
Right. Well, Sam Sodgy, nicknamed Dodgy Sodgy, boasting to this undercover reporter that he was preparing to fix matches at the World Cup as well, which presumably would fall into the less likely category.
Well, it depends who you're talking about. I mean, there are obviously nations there who aren't on Premier League wages.
Are those the ones we should target?
Those are the ones who probably beat England, I think.
All right. Interesting.
Well, I mean, is it actually match fixing? It's spot fixing.
Right.
It's betting on a certain thing to happen at some point in the game, a player to get booked at the time of the first throw. Matthew Letizia has already admitted to this in his book. Southampton used to do it. They used to pool their money and put a bet on the time of the first corner and then hoof the ball straight into the stand from the kickoff. That's not match fixing.
For which cricketers have gone to prison?
Yeah.
I've also spoken to former Premier League footballers who've joked about the Christmas programme and how they count up their bookings. And if you just needed one more booking to get a suspension over the Christmas holiday, by thunder, you would find yourself a booking.
Well, I can't think of any modern example of that. Can you, Barry?
I can, actually.
Yeah, there you go. Now, with that, let's return to the Premier League this weekend, because all sorts of other terrific games to look at. I'm particularly intrigued by Fulham, reborn now under Renny Mühlenstein, heading up to Everton. They beat Villa, you know, the Cottagers.
They did, and by all accounts, a much improved performance, inspired in no way by that hex, which your friend and mine, Archie, who I know from LBC and you know from BT Sport, he texted me as the game kicked off and said, please could you say Fulham have got no chance, which I duly did, and 60 seconds later they scored.
That's extraordinary.
So I would like a win bonus, please.
There you go. You don't want to get on the wrong side, Fulham, of Ian McIntosh. You could really mess up your season. As if it wasn't messed up enough already. Blue Dylan says, regarding the loan players issue, which came up in Monday's pod, I've said this elsewhere, but I want to reiterate it. Barry is out of contract. That's Gareth Barry. Relax, listeners. Barry is out of contract in the summer, so there's every chance it will be a permanent signing. And we've got an option on Dale Lafayette on a two-year loan, although it is unlikely that we get to keep Lukaku, but we'll still have money left over from the Fellaini-McCarthy moves and Anichibi, or Anichibi rather. So, yeah, this business of it being short-term is...
So does this mean that Everton fans are going to worry that Gareth Barry is playing a bit too well because someone bigger might come in and sweep me, or he could get signed by Manchester City?
That's very, very true, isn't it? Very true. Their prospects against Fulham probably good this weekend, would you feel?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah, all right then. The rest, Amy?
They were fantastic last weekend, I thought, at Arsenal. And not only have they got good chances this weekend, they've got good chances for the rest of the month. In fact, I don't think they play a top four team until they have the another Merseyside derby at the end of January. So they've actually got a really good opportunity to stake a genuine claim and cement a position in and around the top four. I couldn't resist.
In and around the top four.
It's extraordinary because they started so slowly with all of those draws, and just one win from that would have put them joint second.
Wow.
And would have them as title contenders.
Mm.
It's been many, many
years.
That's
their season over, isn't it? Listen, the team that is in second right now is Liverpool, and they might move to within two of the lead if things go wrong for Arsenal. They are at Spurs. Now, Spurs are playing Thursday night in the Europa League, which I'm guessing means bad things for their chances of getting a result at home too, the rampant Suarez and co.
Quite possibly, because AVB has this strange habit of taking that competition really, really seriously. He is the polar opposite of the Napoli owner, who of course came out last night and said the Europa League is a complete waste of time. But AVB feels entirely the other way, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of team he sends out. However, Liverpool have their own problems, because...
Tell us about those problems, Ian.
Sturridge is injured, and now Gerrard's injured. Gerrard. 6 weeks. So if only they had some kind of super player whose value was the equivalent of three or four normal players.
Mm. All right, well, you're referencing that man Suarez and his 15 goals in 10 games. But the fixtures they have coming up are tricky ones. Not only the visit to White Hart Lane, but also Man City and Chelsea. Again, this is a series of weeks that could redefine or completely redimension. That's not an English word, but you know what I mean. Liverpool's position in the table.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Ian that I think it's important that, you know, it's not just about Suarez, and the injuries they've got to other players is going to be unhelpful.
Ooh, I just remembered, Vertonghen's out probably for 6 weeks, I think, for Spurs.
Yes, though they're planning to do something ungodly to his blood, in a very legal sense, I should say.
Are they blood spinning?
Yes, the PRP technique, which sounds extraordinary, but involves...
How's that going to help his ankle?
They take blood out and put it back in, right, and then it makes his ankle heal quicker, apparently.
Okay.
I'm no scientist.
But not quick enough for this weekend?
No.
All right.
No, nothing could do that, sadly.
Right, which, given the creaky nature of their defence, the various Dawsons and Cabools, etc., might mean a real problem when you're facing the likes of Suarez and indeed Coutinho. Barry, you're nodding.
I'm not.
Emphatically.
Well, yes. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Well, all right then. That'll do. Super. Well, that's an interesting game, isn't it? Liverpool at Spurs. Are you excited, Barry, by Magpies against Saints?
Yeah, a bit.
Right, I would have called them by their real name, but I'd probably have to pay for that. What do you make of that club in the Northeast deciding that it's henceforth going to charge newspapers for access to its players and staff?
Well, there seems to be some doubts about the veracity of this story. There was rumours going around that they were going to send all newspaper outlets letters informing them of several different packages.
Gold, where, silver and bronze.
Yes, where for a sum you could have a fixed amount, you could have a 10-minute interview with Shola Amiobi. I mean, how much would you pay for that?
Or? I don't know. And the bronze package is what, 20 minutes, is it?
Bronze package is an hour with Joe Kinnear, I suppose. Right. He abuses you at a press conference, you know, with a foul-mouthed rant.
So you're suggesting it might not actually be true, this story?
I think they had every intention of doing it, but the story that emerged was that some of the letters had actually gone out, and
right,
a couple of papers had received them. Now, I'm not so sure that's the case, and it seems like the Premier League might have leaned on them and said, look, this is really a bad idea.
It is a ludicrous idea, though, isn't it? I mean, if they
there will be fans out there who think, well, why shouldn't newspapers pay for access to the players whose views we want to hear? And the newspapers are the conduits for that and whatever. So
you could just as well make a case for the newspapers charging Newcastle for publicity, for advertising, every time they mention them.
Absolutely.
And their
and what happens the moment when a football club's greed gets the better of it, plunges down the divisions and suddenly needs the help of the community to survive? You know, who's leading the charge then? It's always the local newspapers. And I can guarantee no club on its uppers will be paying the newspapers to turn up. So it's quite insane if it is actually true, though I do obviously take the point made by a number of people that the media may sometimes view themselves as more important than they really are. But there are, I mean, there are
surely not.
I know, I was staggered as well. But I mean, there are clubs where this would work. Say, for example, and I have no knowledge that they have plans to do this, but Manchester United attempted to do it. I can think of a number of media organisations who would happily pay lots and lots of money to secure access there. But with Newcastle, and I mean this with the very greatest of respect to a club I feel very fond towards, I can't see a massive queue.
That's quite an interesting point, in the sense that, you know, a lot of the clubs, if you go back 10 or 20 years ago, it was fairly easy for media organisations to speak to players, and you just needed to loiter around a car park, and that was more or less enough that you could grab someone and they would chat to you.
Well, thank goodness, I thought this was going to be a Cannock Chase story for a second.
I can't remember what I was saying now. Something about car parks.
Loitering around a car park.
Yeah, loitering around car parks. But it has become increasingly difficult to get any kind of meaningful talking time with players. And I think you're right that there are certain clubs and certain players that probably media organisations would be tempted, but it's a slippery slope.
A slippery slope. All right, then. Dingleberry says Newcastle win 4 in a row, 5-6, beat Man United away for the first time in 41 years, and they still barely warrant a mention in Football Weekly. There you are. We've done a big chunk on that.
Dingleberry. Football Weekly is our podcast. We talk about whatever we want.
Right,
and that's not actually true. They've got lots of mentions.
That's true, they have. Are they gonna continue their fine run of form, 4 wins in 5 against Southampton?
They may well do. Southampton, well, they were on a 3-match losing streak, which came to an end last time out, so it could be a very decent game.
They keep a... They
and
keep
we you could read reports in the papers if any you're allowed into the ground to cover the game.
You got some games there that you've written loads of notes about. Which one would you most like to tell us about, Barry?
Well, Sunderland have an interesting run of games coming up. They're bottom of the table. They've got West Ham away on Saturday. West Ham have a terrible home record. They've lost 4. I think they've only won 1. So Sunderland's run of games, which is a hoy in the Premier League, is West Ham away, Norwich at home, Everton away, sorry, I can't really read my writing there, Cardiff, Villa, Fulham, Southampton, Stoke, Newcastle, Hull. Now, I reckon they need to be getting a minimum of 23 points from those games.
All right, and it all starts this weekend with West Ham, who are only goal difference outside the bottom three. Intriguingly, you only need to score 3 more own goals, potentially in this one game, to equal Leicester's Premier League record for a whole season of 8.
Right, okay.
How about that?
Well, Phil Bardsley could equal Leicester's record on his own, I think.
You're away at Upton Park. It doesn't look good, does it?
Well, West Ham are no good at Upton Park
at
the moment.
Well, that's also true. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be confident. They could well both go down, you know. But
they lost at Selhurst Park under Ian Holloway when the Eagles were still under Ian Holloway.
Yeah. How's that there?
Don't you think this game's got the flavour of sort of two old guys who've had a bit too much to drink coming out of the pub, having a bit of a row one another, taking swings
it's
at each other and missing?
It's all car parks with you, isn't it? Yeah, it probably is. And as such, has a certain raw appeal.
West Ham don't score goals easy, do they? I mean, three.
Well,
against
Sunderland might do it for them, so that's,
that's all they can count on. Yeah. But one against Liverpool, none against Palace, three against Fulham, obviously, and then one, none, none, one. They're not exactly goal friendly. This might not be the most entertaining game of the week.
All right. Well, also down at the bottom, you got your West Brom taking on Cardiff, which is really, really exciting because it could well represent Peter Odemwingie against the team that he basically, with that whole driving away, and again a car park reference. So yeah, I'm sure he's going to be really fired up for that game, isn't he?
Yeah, actually, this is why I bought my notebook, because it was exactly the anticipation of you saying to me, Cardiff against West Brom, Amy, and me sort of making one of those faces. So I did actually look at and try and come up with something to say. And both of these teams, who started off sort of all right, have only won once in around about the last 2.5 months. So there you go.
There you go. There you go. Well, desperate times then. They're both. Well, West Brom are 2 points above the bottom three, and Cardiff only the one. And teams like Hull as well, who were perhaps unlucky not to get the win Monday down in Swansea, who are hosting Stoke. Hull are 5 points above it, 4 points the gap for Stoke. I mean, they're all in there, aren't they, Barry?
Yeah.
They're all in that relegation battle. That's
well, some teams are more in it than others.
That's also true. That's also true. Who's your upset tip? There's always an upset. There's always a Stoke beating Chelsea. Where's it going to come this weekend, do you think?
I'd say Villa to beat Man U.
Right. And I'm not even sure that still counts as an upset.
Does it, yeah.
Ian, have you got anything that leaps at you and says, pick me?
Maybe not a complete upset, but a particularly forthright Palace fighting their way to a 1-1 draw at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea continue to flounder up front.
That would put the cat among the pigeons.
It certainly would.
Did you see this weird story about, I can't remember where I even saw it, some suggestion that Falcao might be
strong suggestions. Well,
eking his way out of Monaco, and there might be some Russian exchanges between the owners of Chelsea and
it's
Monaco.
It's an interesting point. The story is basically Falcao was taken off by Ranieri and did that staring at manager very, very obviously, are you crazy type thing before deigning to leave the field. Since when, Monaco have won all their games after being on a bit of a rubbish run of form. Falcao's injury has not entirely been pinpointed by Ranieri, who has variously said it's his left leg, right leg, or something else entirely. So there's much confusion, and Tuesday's L'Equipe was calling it the Falcao mystery. It does well seem as though what a lot of people predicted at the start of the season when he went to Monaco, that it would only be until January, may well come to pass, and Chelsea would certainly be the club that a lot of people would suggest is the likeliest destination.
So do we think that Monaco are just going to want to recoup the money that they spent on him? Because it was quite a sizable
chunk. It was a significant outlay, wasn't it?
In defence of Ranieri there, though, I'm fairly sure that didn't Monaco score after Falcao had come off, having wobbled about in front? So the move actually worked.
No, as I was saying, they've won all their games since, so good for them.
Poor old Ranieri.
Yeah.
Did anyone see the Keane Vieira documentary?
Didn't, no.
Oh, yes.
Did you? Did.
Very entertaining.
I mean, I saw little bits
with
of him.
The shadow of Sir Alex Ferguson. He had a starring role in it as well, even though he had nothing to do with it whatsoever. Right. Roy Keane just slagging him off repeatedly. It was a great documentary. You should seek it out if you can find it on an iPlayer or wherever.
Super stuff. Well, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. The paper review is there Thursday evening, Friday morning, with some sizzling Turkish and Italian headlines and one or two other things as well. We'll be back on Monday rounding up the weekend. Do join us then. In the meantime, many thanks to guest producer Pete, to Barry Glendenning, Ian McIntosh and Amy Lawrence. Bye for now.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.